right, we're back with Bootstrapped Web again. This week, Jordan is off. He's hanging out with the family. So I'm joined today by Craig Hewitt and Justin Jackson. What's up, fellas?
Doing well, man. Good to be here.
Hey, Brian.
All right. And I think we're coming from three different countries today. Is that right?
Yeah. I think this is actually the first time you've had more French people from French countries on the show.
Watch out. Watch out.
That's probably true.
This is the French invasion show.
Yes, I guess it is. We'll see how this goes. Or I guess it's kind of like the American invasion into Europe with Craig. I don't know.
And this coming out like next week, it might be really interesting, right? After the election.
Yeah, we're going to have to really hold ourselves back.
I just hope it's not as close as that World Series game. I don't want to stay up all night like just trembling with, like, I don't know if I'm going to be scared or happy. Who knows what's going to happen? Anyway.
Are you a baseball guy, Brian?
I'm a really bad sports fan because I just basically tune in the playoffs and the World Series and the Super Bowl and, you know, whatever it is. I don't follow it all year long.
That doesn't make you bad. That makes you efficient.
I guess so. Yeah. So, you know, fellas, I think most people listening to this show probably know who you are. Justin and Craig, you each host your own podcasts and you've been around these parts for quite a while. So I think it might be cool just to start off, like, what are you guys focused on right now? You know, as we get up to the end of 2016, what are kind of the products that you're working on? And maybe a bit of a focus for this episode as we were going into it. Obviously, I'm sure we're going to go many different ways, but this whole question of like lifestyle business versus building up a big company and a long-term vision for a company. And I know that all three of us have our hands kind of in a bunch of different projects and products, maybe at the same time. So we can talk a bit about managing that versus focused on one big thing. I know I've gone in different directions on that question over the years. So anyway, why don't we just start off with where are things at right now, November 2016. Justin, what are you working on?
So I just relaunched Marketing for Developers as a course. And one thing I realized, so I stopped consulting in November, took a break to clean some stuff up in December, and then went independent in January. And I've been waiting since I was 22 to be kind of running my own business again full time. And so I kind of went a little bit crazy and started a bunch of things all at once. And I think one thing I learned in those first 6 months, I spent about 6 months just doing all sorts of things.
And you're just talking about 2016 right now. Like you're,
that's right.
Just this 2016. Is the first full year of being completely self-employed, which actually I think a lot of people might be surprised to learn that about you. I mean, we've mm-hmm. been following you for a couple of years now online, but it's only this past year that you went fully on your own.
Yeah. My wife and I had a deal. We had kids early. We started when we were 22. And the deal was I couldn't do a business full time until our kids were in school. And so that just happened last year. Liam went into grade one. And so it made sense to do it at that point. And also there's other things too, right? Like I felt like I'd built up enough audience and enough other things that I could take that leap. Basically, starting January 1st, I was on my own for just like focused on my own stuff. And I think what I learned was that you really need to focus on one thing at a time. You need to have a product pipeline. So I was working on all these things. And when I was, you know, consulting full time, it was no problem because money was coming in. But then when you're only relying on products, and you don't have something coming down the line, it got to June and I was like, oh, I made no money this month. Like, you know, I should have planned better.
Correct me if I'm wrong. You were doing a lot of different things that like some had recurring revenue, some were kind of one-time purchase.
Yeah. Yeah. Mostly one-time purchase things and way too much exploration stuff. Like way too much just like, oh, I want to try this out and I want to try to serve this audience. And I'm glad I went through that. I think it was a good midlife crisis. And I think there's a lot of benefits to that. I'm still very pro working on multiple things, but not all at once. And being much more picky about those things
I'm sorry. Don't you think the only way to learn that is to do it and get your hand in too many things and learn that, you know, an info product or a book or a course or a SaaS or a WordPress plugin isn't right for me is to just do it and screw it up maybe and then go, wow, never. That shiny object is never going to come up again.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, in retrospect, I had some people like, do you know Michael Buckby? Do you know him?
Yeah.
He was one guy that was saying, man, I think you're like, I was going and trying to broaden my audience to artists and musicians and all sorts of other people. And he's like, you should have just stuck with developers. And at the time I was like, nah, you don't know what you're talking about. But now in retrospect, when I look at my data, like where does most of my revenue come from? It's, you know, mostly from marketing for developers, which is the book I released last year. And then I just relaunched it as a course this year.
I mean, just, you know, been watching what you've been doing for a while. I do think that that really connects that just that whole concept of marketing for developers and whether that's coming through free content, a book, a membership, a course, like that is a problem that a identifiable market has. And you're connected to that audience and they know you, you know them really well. It's just, I think everything really connects. And I definitely learned this very much the hard way over the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years is like, I was also one of those people who just tried a lot of different things, an ebook here, this kind of SaaS, that kind of SaaS, this productized service and consulting work, you know, and all different types of things and WordPress products, downloadable products, all this stuff. I liked that. I like moving from thing to thing. I still do it, but serving different audiences, that was the most challenging thing. And I feel like finally now in 2016, I'm everything that I'm doing is at least somewhat interconnected. And, you know, like just a couple of years ago, I was doing stuff for restaurants and some things for like freelancers and web designers, and then others just for like entrepreneurs. And like, especially the separation between restaurants and hospitality and the web and like the entrepreneur world, completely separate. I still have my hands in multiple things, like really focused on audience ops. And then I still have my personal site doing productized services and blogging there and stuff. But at least there is some overlap. And I mean, this podcast, Bootstrapped Web, is kind of like a side project as well. You know, there's definitely some overlap. Like there are clients of Audience Ops who are also in my personal list or listeners of this podcast. And Audience Ops itself is a productized service business, or at least it started that way. And I teach about building productized services. So there's some overlap and case studies that I think are connected. But it's still like, even like now I'm doing this thing with like Friday notes that I send an email out to my list every Friday.
Okay. Yeah.
And I treat audience ops as like my full-time job, and I still have to break myself away from audience ops for a couple hours on Friday to write this email. And there's this like this tension between like, I should be working on my business, but I'm doing this side project, or even right now I'm recording a podcast that this is not an audience ops thing. This is Bootstrapped Web. So for this hour, I don't have my sole focus on my business, and I'm not sure if that's good or bad, but I think it's working at least for
now. So you're kind of bitter right now as you're talking to us.
Yeah. Like you guys are, you know, kind of getting in the way here, but
we're a burden. You know, I think that switching cost, it's not just the time factor, but the emotional factor of switching cost is pretty real, right? Cause you're taking a few minutes to step away from doing your audience ops work to at least set up for this podcast, which you've done 100 of or whatever. And then to get back in the audience ops mode afterwards, I find is a little bit tough. I have my hand in a few different things. And yeah, it's tough even within the business to focus on, you know, customer service and then marketing and development and kind of biz ops and then housekeeping and all that kind of stuff is hard enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To look at doing really different things is really hard. I think at least if you're in the same mindset and serving the same customer, it's pretty simple. One of the good anecdotes I heard about it was giving multiple solutions to your audience. You know, I think Brennan Dunn does a good job of this, right? Because he has, you know, all the double your freelancing stuff, but it started as like a little ebook, right? And then built it into bigger and bigger courses and events and things to give multiple kind of yes options to your customers, depending on kind of what they need. I think it's a great way to look at it.
Yeah, exactly. That right now, back into like building mode with an audience ops and planning for 2017. And up till now, we've just had the productized service, and then it's going to become like a SaaS plus a service, plus a training product that we're putting together, all for the same audience, but like different segments or different products in that ladder. But Craig, you know, so, you know, most people probably know you, founder of Podcast Motor, you know, successful growing podcast editing service. But you guys recently acquired some other businesses and content stuff. Can you tell us about those? And like that's like a completely separate thing, right? Like, how has that been going?
In hindsight, I didn't know what I know now when we did that. Otherwise, I do kind of see the switching cost, even though we don't sort of actively work on our content sites very much. They're kind of in the travel niche and they're monetized with AdSense and affiliate stuff. And the reason we did it was to help bridge the gap when I wanted to quit my day job, which wasn't that long ago. I quit my day job about 6 months ago now. Well, yeah, I just celebrated my 6 month anniversary, I guess, of me cutting the cord. Yeah. And the reason was, is we just kind of needed more income. And we looked at the ability to make an investment in a couple of internet properties that cash flow really well relative to something like real estate or the stock market or anything like that. Looking at investing in online businesses is, if you have the appetite for it and know something about online business like we do, it can be really lucrative. And so that was the purpose for it. And it's gone really well. I don't spend 2 hours a week on our sites, and they make good money. And I think so far it's been a really good return. The thing I might do differently, knowing what I know now, is like we're talking about, kind of align everything I do kind of under the same relative umbrella. I don't think I would want it to be all exactly the same, but at least sort of talking to the same audience and doing about the same thing. Yeah, and Podcast Motor is growing and doing great, and I wouldn't necessarily need to do that now, I guess, from a financial perspective. But looking forward a little bit, you know, we're looking at kind of expanding and doing more with our business, and I want to at least be able to talk to an audience that I'm familiar with. So I think I learned that lesson, that what I want to do in the future all needs to be kind of going generally down the same road.
Yeah, I guess this also kind of brings up the question of what is the long-term vision, or even just like for like this year or next year? Is it to grow a large company, or is it to support your current lifestyle, or a little bit of both? And how do you guys kind of think about that and like where this is headed and all that?
Yeah, I mean, for me, like my initial goal was just to replace a portion of consulting revenue. So I said, you know, for this year, if I can make $10,000 a month, that would be a good start. And I still feel like it's still so new. So like in January, I'll be going into my second year. And my goal is still financial. So now maybe, you know, my goal will be to get to $200,000 in revenue for the year. I'm a company of one. Right now, I really like that. I've thought about that a lot. I'm 36, so I'm not getting any younger. I spoke at a conference.
I noticed gray hairs on my beard for the first time this week. So.
Oh, man.
It's a major milestone right there.
I spoke at the AppSumo conference in Austin, and I was the oldest speaker. I looked around the speaker table, and I asked the question publicly. I was like, wait a second, am I the oldest guy here? And they all like looked at me like, yeah, Justin, you're like real freaking old. So like that weighs on me a little bit, but I really like just being a company of one right now. Any revenue I make, I basically get to keep. There's no one else that I'm paying.
That'd be so nice.
I know. That's what I've just been thinking.
And so the disadvantage to that is if I get sick or whatever. So looking beyond 2 years or a year, I've been thinking a lot about, there's not very many people in our space that are of the retiring age. And that worries me a bit. If you've ever worked on an old construction crew, there's always some old haggard dude that's like, guys, get out of this before, you know, you turn 40 because your knees and your back are going to be gone. But we don't have a lot of...
If it's dependent on your own time, then it's...
There's some danger there. But yeah. Right, but now...
If you build things into like recurring revenue and build systems and that sort of thing, I do think that it's really challenging, if not impossible, to do it completely solo forever. There are plenty of people who stay really, really small, like two or three support people and you know, assistants, and that you know, sustains. I mean, like this year, I'm definitely on the other end of that stress thing, because I've got a lot of people now on the team that are dependent on this thing continuing to roll on. And
yeah,
I think the good thing is that it right now the service is structured in a way that it's all recurring. So even the cost with people, especially the freelance contractors, goes up and down as revenue goes up and down.
Yeah.
But now 4 US based people have ramped up to the point where they're full-time salary employees. So they don't necessarily ramp up and down. And then we've got a bunch more people beyond that who, you know, who've been with us every week. So that's definitely a sense of pressure, and like getting back to like, I should always be working on audience ops. Like that definitely weighs on me all the time. But I think it's also like working with the team, I feel an obligation to them for them to know that like, hey, I'm in here working every day too. You know, I'm just working on the marketing stuff and sales and kind of the systems and growing stuff. I'm not necessarily like, I do have the ability to go take a vacation, and the team is there to handle the service and we've got managers in place and everything like that. But yeah, there's definitely a pressure there for sure.
Yeah.
I think you kind of need to look at where you are in your life sort of cycle. And I think we all are probably getting to where we're going to want to take the big shot, if you will, but you have to know when it's the right time to take that too. And I think that, you know, Brian, for you with Audience Ops and me with Podcast Motor, growing a service business to, yeah, whatever, 100,000 a month in MRR is not like the shot to take necessarily. I think it's a nice business to have and to grow and sustain. And we have people that are relying on us, and it's great for me. I think it's great to provide jobs for so many people. I mean, we have 12 people that we employ at least at some level, and that's great. And I love it. But I think, you know, you look at something that could really be big is when I would probably change my mind, because I'm in the same boat as you guys. I mean, you know, we moved to France so that we could make a big lifestyle change. It's not, you know, we didn't move to France so I could work all the time. But if I got the chance to build, I use it all the time, build, you know, Drip or ConvertKit or whatever, I would definitely take it, because I also have learned enough to, I think, be able to do it successfully now. So I think it's just a matter of time.
Yeah. I mean, like Jordan and I bat this question around a lot on this podcast, but in terms of like lifestyle with business, I value two things. Number one, having plenty of free time, and especially now more than I used to when I was younger. I mean, with 2 little kids running around, and we also like to travel a lot and take a lot of free time. And I like to take afternoons off, and Fridays I try to keep pretty light, and weekends, like that stuff, that time is gold to me. And when I was in my 20s, I could happily work on a product, pull all-nighters and work over a weekend, and that's totally not a problem. Now I just can't do that, and I don't want to do that. That's number one. But then number two is I feel strongly that I have to really dig what I'm working on. When I'm here in the office and working, I got to really, like, not everything is going to be, there are going to be fires, there's going to be things that suck. That's just how it goes. But if it's a total grind, and if I don't really enjoy talking to our customers and our clients, like on calls and meeting them at conferences and things, if I don't enjoy doing that, this is not working, you know,
yeah.
No matter how like scalable or sustainable it is or how successful it is. I mean, if I look back to Restaurant Engine, I was not willing to fly my ass out to Chicago to go to the restaurant industry conference and talk to restaurant vendors. Like, that's not something I'm going to want to do, you know?
Yeah. So. I keep thinking about this question. So one of the things I'm trying to challenge myself with this year is to make myself uncomfortable whenever I can. So for me, growth always happens through discomfort. And so one of the areas I'm trying to push myself in is I like being a solopreneur. I like just working for myself. I really like to work. Like my favorite part of the day is biking to my office and spending time here. It's like my little studio, and I get to like work on things all day and then go home. Like, I like that. But, you know, to Craig's point, like, so if you'd asked me 6 months ago or even I even today, like, do you want to take a big shot at something? I'd say, no, I don't want to take a big shot at something. That just doesn't appeal to me right now. But I'm trying to consider it, partly because I worry about the future and I wonder how long is this sustainable, just me? And partly because I wonder if eventually, my guess is eventually this will no longer be, this will be too comfortable for me and I won't be learning anything new and I'll want to go do something bigger. Maybe, who knows? It's really hard to tell. And again, like Jason Fried is like maybe in his 40s or something like that. So if that's our you know, prototype of a bootstrap SaaS founder and he's the unicorn, like we have no idea what it's like to live a full life and then retire from that business. Like there's not that many examples of that. And I just kind of feel like, man, there's not enough data.
Yeah. We were all just talking about like, oh, we're getting old. We're not that old. Let's be clear here, you know? And the other thing is, the one thing that I have learned over these past few years is how much you can get done in a single year and how much time, there's plenty of time ahead of us to get into other stuff. And I got to constantly try to pull myself back and like, get your head out of the future. And start focusing on what's happening right now. Like sometimes I over plan for like next year or the year after, like when am I going to build the SaaS into X MRR and what's that going to turn into? Even thinking like 5 years down the line, 10 years down the line, like what is this business going to look like? Like there's plenty of time to evolve into that. And there's going to be way more and different data than there is now. So there's no point in looking that far ahead.
So that brings up a good point. It's a little off topic, but planning and what you guys do for planning to sort of get your business where you want to go. Do you guys do like annual or quarterly internal business reviews with yourself? Or
I do a lot of monthly planning. And I also do annual, but what I always find is the annual plan changes so much.
That's too much, yeah.
If I look at my 2016 annual plan, like it's probably like four or five items on there that I wanted to get done this year, and two of them I've already decided like they're just not going to happen, like or because I didn't want, like I decided not to go that direction. But on a monthly basis, I really look hard at and I guess quarterly too. But what are the four or so things that need to ship this month? But sometimes it's not even like shipping. Sometimes it's like, if I look back to October, which was, you know, October just ended, that was a big strategic planning month. Not a whole lot was shipped. We started development on the SaaS, but like I started thinking through marketing and what is the new marketing funnel going to look like? What is the product line going to look like in 2017? And so I spent a lot of time batting different ideas around on that. And I made some conclusions and some final decisions on that in October. So now that we're in November, now it's like, okay, got the plan in place. Now it's about execution and getting the team together, assigning tasks, writing out outlines, setting internal deadlines and delivery dates, and now we're moving ahead. So I think about it in like that. Yeah, I mean, in terms of like goals and stuff, like MRR goals, I think it's good to do a little bit of projection, but again, like it's going to change so much that a lot of the projections I find have been, we hit them earlier than I expected, but then other times it's like the whole product line changed, so there's no way to predict.
Yeah, we do a similar thing. I do definitely, there's monthly reviews of kind of what the business did the last month and then kind of what we want to do the coming month. And then look at the year kind of in two halves. I know in the day job, it was month to month and just so much micro focus on everything. I think our business hasn't changed that much, which is nice. So it's just kind of how can we do more and better of the same with Podcast Motor? And so kind of doing a monthly review of how we did and then kind of how can we do a little bit better the next month? And then twice a year, kind of take, I know a lot of folks talked about like a founder retreat or whatever. I kind of take like a half a day and just tell my wife, hey, I need to go think and I'll go just on a hike or something. And really just kind of say, are we going down the right path still? And fortunately, to almost, a year and a half into the business or whatever, it's it's been good enough. But I can see, I mean, if we were launching a SaaS or really releasing a bunch of new products, needing to do kind of the big picture look a lot more often.
I think the hardest thing about it is breaking yourself out of the day-to-day ups and downs of the business. If we had a slow month in terms of sales, or if we had more cancellations than usual, like those kinds of things can easily get inside my head and say, what are we, like, we have to fix sales right now, or we have to fix churn right now. But if I look at the year as a whole, like, you know, sales and churn went up and down at different times. And it's important to just like step back and decide, like, is this a long-term problem that we really need to sink into and fix? Or is it just a bad month? And, you know, and I think, and like, don't deviate from the bigger plan. And I think that's, I try to go back and forth between like planning and then execute for like 3 months, and then maybe regroup and plan some more, and then execute and try to separate myself from the day to day. But it's so hard. The other challenge is not like taking that time to go on a walk and plan or take a retreat or something, because a lot of times you make a lot of progress in your business just from working every day. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh wow, 10K MRR. That was like a goal that I had since a few years back. And and if you don't take the time to set new goals and set new targets, then that's when I start to just chase shiny objects and do all these different things, and you kind of lose focus. So
yeah. For me, it's really project based. So I just like finish one thing. I finished the relaunch of marketing for developers, and immediately I was like, okay, I'm going to start working on the next thing. I'm not very good at long-term planning. I got to get better at it, because Paul Jarvis is always kind of getting after me for this, because he thinks usually in 3 month chunks, like, okay, what's coming down the line 3 months from now, and then working backwards and thinking, okay, what do I need to do up until that point? On a monthly basis, it's always like, how much revenue did I make last month? Where did it come from? Okay, now let's start this month, right? You know, every month it's basically like, where am I going to make my revenue this month? And hopefully there's something in place that will allow me to do that, right? Whether it's re-promoting an old product or starting something new. So I don't feel like I'm great at it. I think the one thing that I've gotten better at is this idea of setting one big goal that's always top line revenue, like whatever it is, 10,000 a month, 20,000 a month, et cetera. And then just like trying to hit that every month, and then saying, okay, I'm going to start working on this. When am I going to launch it? And then working backwards from there. Yeah. And that's been super helpful to me. But
you've built a really great audience kind of a personal brand for yourself these past few years through podcasting, blogging, and speaking and all that. So I think that definitely puts you in a unique group, and definitely at a unique and well-deserved advantage, I think, when you launch products. And I think it also speaks to your ability to research and know your customers well, like the marketing for developers, like that came out of you knowing your audience, right? Mm-hmm. How much of that do you see playing into all the projects that you choose to take on? Like, if you look at the folks who've done like audience focused businesses, if you will, I don't know, I think about like Brennan and Nathan Barry and, you know, plenty of other folks, but
yeah.
How do you think about that?
Well, one thing is that in terms of like what I focus on, I often do optimize for attention, meaning I can never retreat too much into just working heads down, because you have to maintain a certain amount of visibility. If you're going to run anything like I'm doing, that's part of the game, is that people have to know who you are, they have to trust you, and they have to like you. And if those three things aren't true, then they won't buy. So people that don't like me, don't buy my stuff. People that don't know me, don't buy my stuff. And people that don't trust me, don't buy my stuff.
Yep.
So that is a huge thing. But the advantage to that is that when they know you and like you and trust you, then you have this great ongoing conversation with them, which is usually a pretty good compass for where you want to go next. And I think one of the biggest breakthroughs I had this year was finally fixing Product People Club, which is this membership site I've had for a long time. And I never felt like I had the right fit for that thing. which was basically, it started as a campfire chat that was $10 a month and then eventually grew into a bigger membership site. But I finally feel like I fixed it. I basically feel like I have product market fit now after tons of months of trying and trying and trying and every month thinking I should just can this project and not use it. Just staying in constant conversation with people. And, you know, it usually starts like people might be a fan and that's why they kind of get into your world. But eventually you build such a relationship that it's like a relationship and they're fine with telling you where your stuff sucks. And, you know, I had some people that had been customers for a long time that were like, this Product People Club kind of sucks, man. And those hard conversations were what eventually fixed it. So yeah, I think, again, that's the part I love. You know, Nathan has been pretty upfront to say he's kind of given up a lot of that, whatever you want to call it, you know, audience kind of focused, kind of influencer focused, whatever you might call it. But I, at this stage, I still really like it because I love building relationships with all these people. I still feel like I've got lots to learn there too. So yeah,
I think it's interesting. Even what Nathan's been doing, you know, with building up ConvertKit, there are plenty of people who still follow what he's doing, even though he may not be blogging on his personal site as much and releasing, you know, educational products like he used to. There's no doubt about it. I mean, you're at such an advantage when you have an audience who's tuned in to what you're working on. And it does take extra effort to put yourself out there and take time to write a personal recap post or to podcast once a week or to, you know, like these are things that most business owners just don't fully understand the time investment and they don't really necessarily see the ROI. And I'm not saying that it's for everyone.
It is for everyone in the sense that the switch is from personal marketing to brand marketing. So like you always need visibility. Like if people don't know who you are, like the other day I recommended Craig Podcast Motor on Twitter because it was the top of mind podcast done for you service. But if Craig stops being visible and all of a sudden someone else comes up and I just think of them first, that's who I'm going to share, right? Likewise, if you're going to, you know, like when people think about freelancing, they think of Brennan Dunn. There's a very kind of tightly aligned thing there. But if he stops, like if he stops tweeting, blogging, getting on podcasts, putting on events, all that kind of stuff, people won't think of him first. And so that's the part I like right now. We'll see if I keep liking it. But no matter what you're doing, whether it's a brand or a product or your personal thing, visibility is, it's the game. Like that's, you have to always be top of mind or no one's going to think of you when they're like their boss says, we need someone to edit our podcasts. And the person goes, okay, who do I know that edits podcasts? You know,
better Google that. Yeah.
Better Google it. Yeah.
I think, you know, it's neat to prove out that you, Justin, are able to, we're talking about serve the same audience, but in a bunch of different ways and with a bunch of different products, maybe slightly different audiences. Whereas, you know, like Brennan and Nathan and a lot of these guys are solely focused on one product. For me, and I think probably for you too, that would be a little challenging. I would have a hard time kind of going to work every day doing one thing for years. The thought of that is really tough for me. I'm quick to find something else that interests me and a little quick to get bored with, you know, starting or growing something. I guess I'm relatively new to this, you know, a couple of years in, but
I think it is easy to get bored, but at the same time, as the thing grows and the more and more engaged you are with it, there's so many different problems within one business that need to get solved at different stages. And there's so many little projects that need to be built out. Like for example, the writing, like we hire writers regularly in Audience Ops, and I probably have personally hired something like 20 plus writers over the past year or two, but like, and not all of them are currently on the team, but just over the course of reviewing applications, interviewing writers, and then bringing on writers and training them and bringing them on, 2 months ago, it was like, okay, it's time to hire another writer. At this time, now we have a team manager in place. So instead, I worked on a system to train her to review the applications and do the interviews. And then she just kind of brings up like the final applicants and I'll just do a final interview. So like that was a problem that I worked on that only emerged, you know, 18 months into it. And it's like something to like sink yourself into that. And then whether it's like removing yourself from processes or starting up new marketing campaigns or thinking about a second or third product from the same brand, that's what I'm really enjoying more now in audience ops than I did in something like Restaurant Engine or any of the little side products that I had worked on in years past. I mean, the other thing that I'm constantly looking for now in everything that I do is how can this become automated and continue producing going forward after I stop working on this one project, you know? Mm-hmm. And like on my personal blog and selling the productized course, you know, that actually continues to sell pretty well every month. Not nearly as much as it did like when it first launched or when I do like big promotions and stuff like that. But like it still sells a handful of sales every month, which is a chunk of my monthly income. And I worked hard on a lot of back-end automation with my list and sending out like free resources and free recorded workshops and repurposing a lot of my old content that goes out to the list and even like timing coupons and things like that. And I think that stuff is important as well. Like just recently I set up Edgar for automated tweets. I hope that doesn't become too annoying in the next few weeks. I just set up, but you know, I'm trying to repurpose a lot of the stuff that I spent the last few years producing. And now that I'm focused so much on audience ops, I'm not writing as many new things on my personal blog. So I think it's important to think in terms of like, how can this continue on? Like Justin, how much of that kind of stuff do you do? Like, cause you've produced so much content and
I need to get better at it. Again, that's a place I think I'm trying to force myself to get comfortable. You know, there's always one side of you. Like one side of me is like, I want to write every tweet, you know, I don't want anything automated. I want to be fully engaged in the whole thing. I want to write new stuff all the time because it forces me to write new stuff. But on the other hand, even like I did this post purchase drip for people that bought my book Jolt. And that alone was amazing in terms of what I was able to accomplish with that. So like, you know, thanks for buying. Here's a free gift. And then a few days later, you know, how's the book? You know, you can listen to it on this secret podcast feed. And then a few days later, leave a review. Like that automated process alone kind of generated a bunch more sales and a bunch more interest. So I need to get better at it. I'm not very good at it right now. I need to do more of it. I'm like fully engaged in it. So
it's interesting that that's a post-purchase sequence, which is, that's usually like the last thing that people think about. But if, you know, there's a lot of marketing automation that goes to get a subscriber to buy something for the first time.
Yeah.
You're smart to focus on people who've already bought because they're either more likely to recommend it or buy something else.
Yeah. And the last drip in that sequence is, you know, here's some other things you could buy. So yeah, I need to do that more. And I, you know, I've got a few things kind of out there that I wish I was like, you know what, if I just fix that up, it would perform better. But I really like making...
Oh, there's so many of those. my whole site needs to be fixed up.
Yeah.
I think that automating some of this stuff and, you know, like you're saying, putting the drip sequences is easier when you have a big chunk of content around a particular item. And Justin, since you're into so many different things, maybe that's a little more challenging. Whereas Brian, I know productize and all your personal site is relatively evergreen and all on the same type of content. So I wonder if that's why it's easier for you.
I definitely have a lot of stuff I could reuse.
I remember when I went, actually got the idea for this originally from Nathan Barry when he was talking about doing like I forgot how he put it. I think of it now as like the best of newsletters.
Mm-hmm.
And so like if you're a new subscriber in my list, like the first 3 months, you're just getting newsletters of stuff that I wrote like a year or two ago, which is like handpicked like the 10 or 12 best articles. But when I initially set that up, and that's been running for about a year now, I remember I had to go through my site. I had to remove the date stamps and all the articles, and then like kind of read through them and tweak and make sure that I'm not talking about like, oh, it's Christmas time again, and we're like anything that's like related to any date, I had to kind of remove and make it more evergreen. But you know, one run through of that, and then also tweak the newsletter.
So did that work though? Like in terms of results, like were you able to see results from that that were significant, or is it more just like you like it because it makes you feel at ease because you know that, you know, you've got this automated process?
Yeah, I think it works. It definitely keeps traffic coming back to my best performing stuff. And those articles aren't getting buried in the archives. Mm. And there are definitely some calls to action to get into the productized course throughout that sequence. And that definitely drives some of the monthly sales and whatnot.
Okay. So Craig, on your side, how have you automated your thing? Like if someone comes to your site to Podcast Motor and, you know, sends in a request, what is the kind of sequence that happens and how much of that is automated?
Yeah. So the inbound stuff is not automated. I have a sales background, so I enjoy having the conversations with our customers and our potential customers. To this point, I'm still doing all of the sales calls and handling a lot of the new inquiries. We have somebody who handles some of the kind of standards, like, hey, you know, what if you want to do two shows a month instead of four or five, like weekly shows? So we have some people that reply to some of those messages. But the real automation we've built in is in kind of conducting the service itself. So like onboarding a new customer is pretty complicated, especially if they're starting a new show. So we've done a lot with Trello and Gravity Forms and all this kind of stuff and Drip to automate that. It's been the biggest help in growing the business kind of easily. And I know Brian can kind of attest to how growing a service business is challenging if you don't automate it, because then you, every new customer means a lot of work, you know? Mm-hmm. Whereas like Justin, for you, selling another book or course or whatever is maybe no extra work, but growing a service business, if you don't automate it, makes a horrible job.
Yeah. We have a ton of automation, but a lot of it on the service, on the productized service side of what we do, it's maybe automation is not the right word. It's done manually by people, but we have very standardized processes and tools and methods for doing things. And we do things in a certain way. And there's a ton of stuff that we just don't do because it doesn't fit into our recommended strategy that we implement for customers that they're buying into. And that definitely helps as well, like not to do everything custom, but to do it in one standard way. Definitely helps.
Just something that's still kind of stuck in my craw that we talked about in terms of, you know, a lot of these things are about, we've talked about building towards something bigger. And again, I'm just wondering why I'm holding myself back from that idea of like building something bigger. So for you guys, what is it? Is it the idea of making more money? Is it the idea of just building something that has the respect of your peers? You know, what's the motivation? Where does your ambition come from? Maybe that's the question.
I think having gone through the sale of Restaurant Engine, I really learned what makes a business valuable as like an asset on its own, and what would make it valuable to somebody to buy the business. And I'm not thinking in any way of selling Audience Ops anytime soon, maybe not ever, and I definitely see myself sinking many years into this thing and growing it. But I think all the same like objectives of building it into a self-sustaining business that has value, that's profitable, that supports a team, supports a growing customer base, solves real problems for customers, and does it in a very systematic and predictable growth. Like those are all really good things to strive for, even if you're not planning on selling the business, but they also make it a saleable, valuable asset as well. It adds value into the business, but it also adds value to me personally, because it makes it more, it allows me to have more freedom, more time off, and lower and lower stress the first year of launching something, it's like, this is really stressful because it's not replacing what I made before. And it's, and I need to get to a certain point to support my family. And then even once it gets to a certain, once it surpasses those goals, then it's like, all right, well, there's still too many ups and downs. Some months are really good, some months are down, and those really stress me the hell out. So now I need to make it less and less stress the more it grows. That, I guess that's how I think about it.
Yeah. I think the idea of a saleable asset is a good point, because that's something I'm not really thinking about at all. I can't sell none of this crap out. Like, no one's going to want to buy any of these things in terms of an acquisition, right? I have thought about that before. That's a good point.
I think something that's always kind of in the back of my mind is like, Podcast Motor has been a huge and wonderful learning experience, and it's grown a little bit in spite of my ignorance. You know, I've learned a lot from Brian and other guys that run productized services. At this point, we do a lot of marketing. We don't do any sort of outbound sales or anything like that. So it's growing very organically and not at a huge clip, which is fine with me because I'm still learning a lot about it and other business. But yeah, the big shot is really kind of why I continue to grow and work on Podcast Motor. I mean, it's probably not going to be my big shot, but sort of looking around the corner, if you will, at like my big chance to do whatever, and I'll probably screw it up, but then the next one maybe is going to be where kind of I do make a big business out of something and sell it. Because you look at, you know, like Rob Walling selling Drip recently. I mean, then it's just over, right? You sell for 20 million or whatever, and all of the work you've done is kind of worth it. And so growing and learning how to grow and manage right now is kind of the work I'm doing to get ready for that later on.
I should say, you know, Justin, I kind of relate to what you were asking or saying here about ambition, because I also feel like I don't think in as big terms as a lot of other people that I know. I mean, even like Jordan, we're just going to talk about Jordan because he's not here.
Jordan should be here for this one.
You know, like, just thinking about, like, you know, multi-million-dollar businesses. And I mean, I guess I do have that goal, like a revenue goal like that, but I'm not the kind of person to think about, like, all right, this has to grow into a venture-backed IPO. You know, these are things that I don't ever foresee for myself. And I frankly don't have any interest in going. I really just want to have a comfortable lifestyle, but also build valuable assets that will allow my family to keep living this lifestyle in the next 10, 20 years, especially as I get older. The other thing that I think about is, you know, some entrepreneurs that I know who are in their 40s or 50s, who've built their businesses to a point where they do have multiple business assets, and they're able to remove themselves even more to a point where they're like, where they get an idea for some new product, and us, we would go and build that product and start designing it and wireframing it and launching it. But guys on that level, they give it to their,
hire you to do it,
product manager. Like, here's the idea, now go run with it. And let's do that on the side, and let's do these five other things, and you know, just kind of invest in all these different things. So, like, whatever I'm building now should be building up into something like that.
Yeah. Like, right now, my ambition is just to feed my family. And so the thing I've been trying to force myself to do is to think bigger. And then when you think bigger, you just start to ask other kind of existential questions, like, what is the point of building something bigger? What's driving the ambition? So for Nathan, initially, it was he wanted a bigger challenge. He wanted to have a team. You know, he wanted to crack the secret code of running a profitable software as a service business. And so that's what motivated his change, right? It's interesting to kind of think about what's actually motivating people to, as Craig says, take that big shot, and also maybe what is holding people back. There's like this tension between those two things of, yeah, I could take a big shot, and, you know, but why do I want to hold myself back from that too at the same time?
Yeah, I think a lot of entrepreneurs, you know, contrary to popular belief, or there's just this misconception that Like I'm very, very risk averse. I'm not going to go take a huge risk on something. As fast as I like to move from day to day, I like the freedom of being able to build this business as slowly as I want to, you know, and I don't ever really want to have the pressure of like, we have to reach a million MRR to reach an IPO in the next 3-5 years. Like, I don't ever want to have that kind of pressure, but I've also experienced the kind of pressure of like, all right, I hate the work and it's really pissing me off and stressing me out. And whatever product work I'm doing right now is not making enough money to pay the bills. And that's another kind of stress that I've experienced plenty of times in recent years. So I'm trying to keep myself in between those two extremes.
Yeah.
As possible.
You know, I think ConvertKit is an interesting case study of this because in my head, I say that like when the right opportunity presents itself, I'll know it and that'll be the time to go all in. But and Nathan's been pretty open about ConvertKit really floundering for a long time and then deciding to double down and reinvest to make it his sole focus. I think that's really interesting because in my head, I think look at, you know, when the opportunity presents itself, I'll know it and it'll be obvious and I'll be really excited about it. And it'll be the time when I don't see all the shiny objects and are able to focus on something for like 5 years. But I definitely applaud him for saying like, I'm going to make this work. This can and should work and I'm going to make it work when it had sort of floundered for a while. And in a lot of respects, you know, maybe he shouldn't have done it. It's just real interesting, I think.
Yeah, I mean, there's a cautionary tale in there too, in that how many people start SaaS businesses every year and how many of them even get to $10,000 a month in MRR? Nathan's an interesting case study because he had success doing what he was doing before and then he had success doing this. Statistically, he is an absolute outlier, like an outlier within outliers. Mm-hmm. This is an example of me operating between two tensions of, on one hand, saying I should push myself to go after something bigger. And the other side of me going, but statistically, you know, there's lots of good people that are, you know, way smarter than me and way whatever that have tried the same thing. And statistically, there are not that many that get to 10,000 MRR a month, much less whatever Nathan's at now, right? But on the other hand, part of me knows, if I took more of those chances, I would be increasing my chance of...
If you weren't chicken shit about it, yeah.
First of all, you have to remember all the advantages that you have working for you just out of the gate. Not just the fact that you have a list, but the fact that you'll identify the pain points much more clearly and you're already connected to your audience and to your market. And so literally just repeating what you've done up until now of listening to them and listening to their problems, that's going to basically guide you, you know, whatever products you like, and whether it's a SaaS or a book or downloadable software or whatever it is. Like,
I like that idea of the big shot can grow out of your little shot.
Yeah. And if you look at what ConvertKit was, I mean, the same thing. I mean, it kind of grew out of, He kind of made a name for himself in a way through email marketing and you know, it kind of fit, you know?
Yeah.
What you're saying about growing a SaaS to 10K MRR, and this just gets off into a tangent, maybe another whole episode, but there is this common like maybe misconception or it just takes a lot of time to sustain that sort of business, to get it up to 10K MRR, that is not going to be 10K profit. In order to sustain that for as long as it takes to get to that point and beyond, there has to be a reality check and some plan in place for self-funding that or a plan to get some sort of investment for it. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's not enough discussion of that in our circles. Whether you're going to self-fund through consulting work with a productized service, through selling info products, if you've been building an audience, you kind of have that as an option at your disposal. So, and even now, like I'm with the SaaS that we're planning for Audience Ops, the Audience Ops service is basically funding all the development of building the SaaS, which is going to be a 6 to 8 month just building before we can even get it out and launched. And that's, and we're funding that, but I'm still trying to think ahead to how we're going to fund this through the first year of getting enough paying customers to make that just a viable business on its own. And so now I'm planning to do a paid training product from Audience Ops to help as another revenue channel to help offset and continue to self-fund. So I think there are different decisions that need to go into planning how to launch a product like that than what we see in most of the press, which is...
Yeah, totally. Well, even Nathan saying, I'm gonna take 50 grand of my own money and just put it down, and I'm going to give up paying myself anything for the first whatever, and all of a sudden realizing he needed a line of credit and then he couldn't get one. You know, like there's all these places where it could have not gone well. And he's just been transparent enough that we could see the process.
Yeah.
But man, like you think it, and he was pretty lean, you know, like that was, so there's still like the difference between maybe the comfort I have right now, which is I can always launch another smaller training product. But the idea of like, you know what, I'm going to risk 50 grand of my own money, and I'm going to risk 2 to 3 years of development. And, you know, that gap is the scary part. It's not, so you can grow a bigger shot out of your existing kind of what you've built up. But, you know, there's so many examples of, you know, Casey Neistat launched Beam. And if anyone had a built-in audience and advantage in that market, it was him. And obviously it did not work. We're way too focused on like the survivorship bias in this culture is very strong. There's also this idea that SaaS is like the golden ticket always. And that's right. Why I like when your episode with Ian Landsman was so good, because he's like, hold on guys, it's not unicorns and rainbows. Like there's so many months I look at someone running a consulting company and I wish I was in that guy's shoes, you know? Right. So I think I like operating in the tension. So it makes me slower than someone who's like, you know, maybe like Jordan and super ambitious. But for me, I just love thinking about both sides. And
yeah,
I mean, maybe it'll be my downfall because I'm not willing to take that big
step. I think a lot of times like the planning ahead to launching something like a SaaS or taking a big shot, as we've been calling it here, I think a lot of times it's about foregoing short-term growth, and it's not necessarily taking a shot like, oh, I'm going to, if this doesn't work out, I'm going to go into deep amounts of debt. Mm-hmm. Like that to me is way more risk than I would be willing to take on for anything.
Yeah.
This investment into the SaaS that we're building now, like I could just totally not do that and double or triple down on our service and grow a much higher revenue business over the next year. But trying to forego that and try to maintain that at its current level and basically make 2017 like a break-even year instead of a high growth year in terms of revenue, but remaking the product line. And I look at what Nathan did with ConvertKit. He put aside a ton of revenue from info products and education stuff and continuing to grow his audience. And he invested his own money into ConvertKit. And he foregone a large growth that he could have had, but on the other side with a view of a two to three year window, you know, he was able to turn around ConvertKit. And so I think it's
about you get to screw that up a couple times too, right? I mean, it might not be a make or break thing, but I think from your, you know, talk about us all getting old, you know, if you're in your late 40s, by the time you actually figure it out, it might be too late, right?
Yeah, but I do think that if you work on enough, and like Justin has been teaching for years, if you work on enough small projects and ship enough things and do a lot of different things, you're going to learn so much over the course of that time that by the time you start to get into the bigger life-changing business moves, you have so much experience under your belt that you're going to bat better than 500 on most of those decisions, you know?
Yeah, I think it also speaks to context. And so like one of the reasons I am limiting myself from making a big shot is I don't feel like I have the money or the time or the resources to do that. Like, I don't have 50 grand. I could just plow into a software as a service right now. And so context is everything, right? Like the risk is too great right now for me to do that. And so, you know, my goal, I guess, in some ways is I need to get to my point, to a point where I could take that big shot. The other thing I'm always okay with too is like, maybe I will never have that opportunity. Like, I've got four kids, I've got to feed and send to college and pay for healthcare and all that other stuff. And
I thought you live in Canada.
I do live in Canada. So healthcare is a lot cheaper. Free, right?
Don't tell me about healthcare costs. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. I know. But the context is important. So the other thing we don't talk about very much is like, Nathan did have 50 grand. He could invest in it, and he was able to forego income for a long time as well, because he'd built his thing up to that point. I'm a year in, I'm not ready for that yet, you know? And so maybe my reluctance, like people's kind of public ambition is always a reflection of what's happening privately, what their personal context is. We all weigh the risk that would take. And right now I'm like, no way. Like, there's no way I could start a software as a service and have that amount of time and energy and money to make it work. Not right now, but maybe, you know.
1 year is a short amount of time, and you're not even past the 1 year mark of.
I know, this could crash and burn this month.
No, but at the same time, you've been at this for what, how many years, making a name for yourself online, and I think for all of us and everyone listening, like the thing that I always fail to remember is like how much there's plenty of time to get into stuff.
Yeah,
down the line, and even if you look at the people who we're all referencing, that the Nathan Barrys, the Rob Wallings, the Brennan Dunns, everyone like in our community here, we're looking at where they're at today, but they've been at this for how many years?
Exactly.
You know, how many iterations have they gone through, and how many mistakes have they made? And like that comes with the territory, you know.
Yeah,
and I think there's nothing to laugh at with. You know, maybe where the three of us are on different scales, maybe even, but, you know, providing for our families, owning our time and having the freedom to do pretty much whatever you want, I think is nothing to laugh at, not tooting any of our, you know, proverbial horns, but it's a pretty solid achievement. And to look at, you know, the big shot or whatever, and potentially kind of losing some of this is pretty scary. I think that the upside is definitely there, but there's a lot of ways to skin the cat of building a bigger, saleable, really nice business. SaaS is one of those. But I know Justin talked about like peak SaaS, and I agree it's sort of risky, but I think that we can all just kind of look at like just growing a bigger version of the existing business we have as being really sort of predictable, not super risky, and really a very good business move.
Every now and then I'm reminded of how good we have it right now. And I think everybody listening to this, I mean, the other night I was in New York City walking past Penn Station around rush hour, and I just see thousands and thousands of people just cramming into the train station to get on that commuter train home. And I'm just like, oh my God. And I used to do that years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that I'm sitting in my home office right now and I don't have to spend 3 hours a day on a commuter train.
Yeah. You know, sure there's someone listening to this episode that's stuck in traffic. It's like, shut the fuck up, you guys. You guys are... And so I think, and that's why I think I would agree for sure that it is always worth it to start making your own things. It is always worth it to start small and start now, whether you're 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90. I do not think I'm not.
90, it's a little late, but
I am not as optimistic as a lot of people in our culture that, you know, that SaaS is a golden ticket and that everyone should pursue it, and that even any great percentage of us will achieve it, because I know that statistically that is just not possible. The reason I love what I'm doing right now is I think it is possible for anybody, regardless of their stage of life, to start creating a little tiny something and put it out into the world and get all sorts of benefit from that. But the big shots are completely, the ability to take a big shot is completely dependent on a very privileged context and then having the guts to do it. So maybe I have that privileged context, I probably do, and I just lack the guts. But there are for sure, like if you were a single mom, it's going to be a lot harder for you to start a software as a service. That context will make it more difficult for sure.
I just don't think that, I don't think of it in terms of a big shot. I just think that these things evolve over a long period of time. And what, looking from the outside in on other SaaS businesses or just businesses in general, those did not happen overnight. Even start, if you look at like when they initially invested in starting that SaaS, the idea for the SaaS came months or years before that. And there was months or years of learning with other products that led up to the confidence to do that. And
That could be true, but there's still obviously a gap, right? Like even like Ruben's been really upfront with saying, you know, a big reason BidSketch succeeded is he sacrificed an enormous amount building it, lots of time, lots of like every evening and weekend, every waking moment he was working on that thing. If you're not in a position to do that, then you're going to have a hard time doing that, right? Like that's just the truth. And so the optimistic side is saying, yeah, start something small, build it up, grow it over time. But there's no guarantees for any of that. And so don't just think that just because you're doing that, you're eventually going to, you know, start the next ConvertKit. We have one ConvertKit, and then we have one BidSketch. And I mean, we can name all these things, but again, and I think it's more possible than a lot of other businesses. It's going to be more possible for me to start a SaaS than it is for me to whatever else. Like, you know, there's lots of other businesses that are way more inaccessible.
Yep. Cool. Well, yeah, I think we can go all day on this stuff. Let's let's wrap it up here, fellas. Thanks for tuning in, as always. Justin, what are you working on right now? Where can people connect with you?
I think, well, I just relaunched Marketing for Developers, devmarketing.xyz or Z. What do you guys say? Shoot. devmarketing.xyz.
That's very cool. I like it. Craig, Podcast Motor, who actually provides the podcast editing for this very podcast that you're listening to. That's at podcastmotor.com. And anywhere else, Craig?
No, that'd be the best place. Yep.
Very cool. All right, fellas, we'll catch up with you soon.
Thanks, Brian. Cool.